Blog Talk Radio.
Live to another edition of Carson's Corner in conjunction with MMALatestNews.com. My name is Bob Carson, and boy, do we have a great show for you today. Earlier this afternoon, we had an opportunity to speak to the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock. This is Ken's second appearance on Carson's Corner, and I got to tell you, folks, this was one of the best interviews we've done in a long time. Ken Shamrock seemed in great spirits. He seemed relaxed. He seemed confident. You know, last time we interviewed Ken was back in 2009, and there was some possibility of him fighting Tank Abbott. And Ken was you know, tense. You know, Ken was anxious. This was almost a completely different Ken Shamrock. And I got to tell you, you know, we really asked some tough questions on Ken Shamrock, as we do here on Carson's Corner. The stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else or too many places elsewhere on the dial. I mean, it's just not the case. You know, we spoke to Ken Shamrock for about an hour, folks. Okay, and we covered just so much during the course of that hour. We asked him about his relationship with the UFC. You remember that video? It was funny, the video of Dana White. "I'm coming for the money, Ken." You know, it's just, you know how Dana White is. He's just so ridiculous sometimes. It's actually comical. But we got his take on the whole relationship with the UFC. Did they bury the hatchet? What's Ken Shamrock's opinion on the recent class action lawsuit? You know, I asked him, did he regret not waiting till other fighters filed the lawsuit against UFC for their practices? I mean, all of these questions that not a lot of sites are going to ask him about. And another thing that was very, very interesting about this interview, I mean, so many great points. Ken is a very sharp guy. He really has a wealth of knowledge. Is his reasoning for doing the bare knuckle boxing match against James Quinn, who we're actually trying to get on the show as well? You recall last year we broke the story that James Quinn was looking to fight Aaron Brink, who's a good friend of the show, in sort of a hybrid MMA match. And we're trying to get James Quinn on the program as well to talk about his upcoming fight versus Ken Shamrock. But, you know, one of Ken's points was that, you know, people really enjoy the bare-knuckle aspect of MMA when it first began. You recall Ken Shamrock in the earlier UFCs when he fought Chemo. It was bare-knuckle. So he has sort of a place in his heart for bare-knuckle fighting. It's primitive. It looks bad. But Shamrock makes the argument, you'll hear this, that it's actually safer to fight bare knuckles than it is to fight with gloves. And that's an interesting debate. I never really considered that. I don't know how much empirical evidence there is of that. There apparently is some evidence out there. But he goes on to say that there's a lust for bare-knuckle fighting. You look at how Kimbo Slice got popular years ago when Kimbo Slice fought Sean Gannon, the police officer and former, you know, local MMA fighter. It was legendary, and I think he's absolutely right. I think there is a demand out there for bare-knuckle boxing. We just want to see it done legally. We want to see it done in a safe environment and whatnot. And probably one of the most interesting parts of this interview was when he spoke about the legendary incident between him and the Nasty Boys. And Ken could tell a story. You know, it's always good when people can tell an animated story and make you feel like you're witnessing the event. And That happened towards the end of the interview. You've got to listen to that. If you haven't heard about that already, I had heard about that years ago, and I didn't really get the full story about what happened. But I got to tell you, when he spoke about that, it was just absolutely great, because I believed pretty much everything that Ken had to say. And the reaction on the part of the Nasty Boys really will crack you up. Take my word for it, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we just went around the bases here on Carson's Corner. And again, I have to stress to you that what's happening now with a lot of these, you know, every website now, everybody has a podcast. And I'm not going to disparage all the podcasts out there. There are some good shows that I listen to on SiriusXM that I enjoy. Okay, you know, these people have been around. Some of these people have been around for a pretty long time. Most of them started after we did, and certainly all of them started after Eddie Goldman did. But, you know, I don't want to disparage too much, because I do listen to, you know, some of the podcasts that are out there. But I'm telling you, folks, you're not going to get this type of content. You're not going to get this type of in-depth interview really anywhere, because everything is just so short-sighted. Everything is about the hot topic on the MMA news sites. What did this guy say, or what did that guy say? What happened during training? And the history of the sport, unfortunately, gets lost, because a lot of these podcasters and a lot of these corporate guys that are covering the show are covering the sport are Johnny-come-lately guys that just don't have a history. Do you think that Kevin Ioli of Yahoo News was covering this sport in the mid-90s? I mean, come on. You know, you could just go down the list. It's really unfortunate. And what happens is people, with the exception of the hardcore fans, don't get a real perspective on the sport. And that's why we're here on Carson's Corner. That's why we've been doing this show for almost 10 years. And we will continue to do so. So I'm telling you, folks, sit back and enjoy this interview with Ken Shamrock. Oh, now my computer's now starting to freeze here. This is all I need here. I don't need this. All right, good. We're going to get back to the studio here. I also want to welcome the folks over at the Underground Forum. The Underground Forum now is listening to this show, and I'm very pleased to have all of the folks over on the Underground Forum listening to this program. And just a reminder that this show will be on MMA Latest News. That is MMALatestNews.com. MMA Latest News. Make sure to visit and support that website. So without further ado, let's give you my interview with Ken Shamrock, which lasted a little over an hour from earlier this afternoon. This is Bob Carson with MMA Latest News, and folks, we are excited as hell to have the legendary Ken Shamrock back on the show with us today. Ken, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm feeling great, man. I get to get out and talk about an upcoming fight, and I'm back into training, and man, I tell you what, I feel rejuvenated and alive.
You sound it, Ken. There's no question about it. You could tell just by the sound of your voice. And thank you again for making a return to Carson's Corner. We already covered a lot of topics relating to the history of your career, the ups and downs, and I urge everyone to check it out. We'll repost that along with the interview on MMALatestNews.com. Ken, it feels like you're coming back at a perfect time, because I know you have a lot going on in your life, including a potential return to action, and there's a lot of people talking. One thing I've noticed is that people seem to really be acknowledging your place in the history of mixed martial arts now. I mean, at one point or another, I think a lot of different fan groups have been upset at you for one reason or another, but these days I see so much positivity about you and your career. Do you think the fans are starting to come around now?
Well, I think so. I think for a long time, there was some issues because I think that the one thing that people really do understand about me is that I do speak the truth, and I do speak my mind. And I think most people understand that sometimes that doesn't work out always well at conversation table. Mm-hmm. But that's who I am. And I think early in my career, I spoke about things I thought that went wrong with me, and then later in my career, I spoke about things that I thought were being done to other people, and I voiced my opinion. I tried to help make some changes, and I was met very abruptly and strongly. Nobody really knew who Ken Shamrock was. My legacy was being pushed out. A lot of stuff happened, and I'm not going to say I was 100% wrong or 100% right, but, I've taken a different direction. I am using different ways to educate and to reach out to help other people, and I think by doing that, I think that now I'm able to myself relax, and I think everybody else around me is able to relax and actually really understand who Ken Shamrock is. And because of that, now people are embracing me. So I do appreciate it. And I never really, like I said in the beginning, wasn't really trying to make anybody mad. I was just trying to correct things that I thought was wrong, or at least help. And it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. So I think you can either keep banging your head against the wall, or you can try to change direction and do something different.
Ken, do you think that in maybe small part, the change in perception is due to you apparently burying the hatchet with Dana White? I mean, can we talk about that? I saw it reported on various MMA websites that you two had finally made peace, and that would be a good thing, I guess, to improve your status with Dana White in the UFC.
Absolutely. After a while, you almost forget what it is that you're actually fighting about. It seems like there seems to be so many different issues that start to pop up after you've already, started to try and fix one of them. And it carries on for so long that so many other things get involved with it that you almost forget how it all started. So for me, when the opportunity arose, for me to be able to reach out and try to bury the hatchet and move on, I was at that point where I just like, I've been at this for a long time. I've tried to voice my opinion. I've tried to help make some changes and try to improve some situations, and it's not working out the way that I thought it would. So I decided to take the opportunity to try and change things and fix things and maybe take a different direction and a way of trying to help make these changes. And I've done that, and so far so good. But I have to really make sure that I understand and appreciate the being able to speak with Dana and also the Fertittas, and them being able, them inviting me to the UFC, showing to the fans that we're past that, because the fans have watched me for so long, and Dana and the Fertittas have been trying to put together the UFC for so long, and the fans deserve to be able to appreciate both of us.
You know, I think that Dana White is the sort of person that doesn't seem like to acknowledge those he perceives to be his opposition or his enemies. I mean, even though Dana tends to have beefs with people that are later squashed, I think many fans were surprised in your case due to the previous legal battles between yourself and Zuffa over issues related to your in-ring career. That's a case they ended up winning, right? I mean, can you take us through what happened with that?
Yeah, I've got to stay away from that. I think that's still something that's, I don't even know where it's at, but I do know that we, as I have been informed many, many years ago, when this thing comes up, is to leave it alone.
I understand. Yeah, I totally understand, because there were some reports that you were on the hook for them for legal fees, and then Dana did that interview where he says, "I'm coming for the money, Ken," and it was kind of funny just to see Dana say that. But it's good that it's resolved. There's I don't think there's any question about that. And during the time you were criticizing the UFC's business practices, it's almost like some fans perceived you as being a traitor to MMA. I mean, some fans seemingly think anything negative might hurt the UFC because it ceases operating and destroys the sport entirely. That's their perception, at least. And people need to understand that that doesn't happen. And that kind of leads me to my next point, is that the recent news that I'm sure you're well aware of has been the major class action lawsuit against the UFC, which I think has some overlap with your own previous legal action. Do you have any thoughts on the class action suit and their allegations that fighters have been unfairly compensated due to the UFC's market position?
Well, again, like I said, I mean, to back up a little bit, when talking about my lawsuit and criticizing the UFC, I personally, I mean, like I said, there was a lot of fans that agreed with me, and there was a lot of fans that didn't agree with me. So, you know, there was that ground in there. And when the stance that I took wasn't a stance of criticism. It was a stance of trying to bring recognition to something that I thought at the time was unfair. And so my criticism or the criticisms that that you had mentioned there, I didn't see it that way. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that other people didn't. So I just want to make sure that was clear, is that my intentions were not to criticize. But to move on to talk about John Jones and some of the issues he's dealing with, along with the the lawsuits and the lawsuits going against the UFC, I personally have nothing to say about that because I'm ignorant to it. I don't really understand everything that's going on with it.
I understand, yeah. And I think I was part of the press conference when they announced that lawsuit, and we still have to wait for discovery. We still have to wait for a lot of legal documents and whatnot. So I guess all of us, to a certain extent, are ignorant on that. But last question regarding this topic. Are there any regrets on not waiting for more fighters to join you? I mean, I got to say, public opinion is much more divided and skeptical of Zuffa now than it was when you were in court with them. And fans are definitely realizing that it's not a one-way street where the UFC is always automatically right.
Well, I don't know. You know, if we can always, go back and fix things, you know, if we had those capabilities, I believe that everybody has things that they wish they could change, and they're no different. And in those situations, same thing. There are things that I wish that I would have waited or that would have been different. But you know what? We deal with what we have in front of us, and we try to, at least myself, I try to deal with things in front of me, and especially now. You know, I know when I was younger it was a little bit different, but aren't we all? Mm-hmm. But I try to look at things in a positive way. And then when I'm dealing with situations that involve other people, I try to make sure when I'm dealing with those situations that I'm not going to hurt anybody in the process, and that I'm not going to damage anybody's reputation or hurt somebody's financial situation. So I really am very focused and concentrate on those things when I am involved with the discussion or debate or something that I disagree with. I don't want to, my intentions are not to go out there and hurt somebody.
Right. And you know what, this is like, I mean, if you were to join in on this class action suit, it would be like opening old wounds, it seems like, you know. I mean, it basically, you've moved on and you've repatched things with the UFC and Dana White, so you know, that wouldn't really make any sense from my vantage point. But in any way, I appreciate you talking about these issues. I mean, we needed to give fans an update on the status of your relationship with UFC and Zuffa. But let's talk about the big news, which is grabbing headlines once again around the world, something you're always able to do with relative ease, Ken, as you know. You're apparently set to face the Irish Traveler, the King of Gypsies, James Quinn. And before we talk about Quinn as an opponent in a bare-knuckle rules fight specifically, can you give us some background, Ken, on how this fight came together?
Well, I think this is no secret, but I've always been a person that has already voiced my opinion on gloves. I didn't like it when they brought them into the UFC. I thought it took away the pureness of submissions, the cleanliness of rear naked chokes, being able to do that when you get somebody on their back. It used to be people going, oh, he's done. Well, now it's almost an anticipation. Can he do it or not? Because
right.
those gloves get in the way. Same with heel hooks or knee bars. They can reach down and actually have something to grab onto to pull your hand off. So it really did mess up the pure submission. But at the same time, it also allowed people who were not that skilled at striking to be able to throw wild punches and knock people out. Because they patted the hand and they knew that if they hit him in the head, they would not break their hand because they have a pad on the hand, but they could still knock people out. So it really changed the dynamics of NHB into mixed martial arts. So I have always been against the glove, even in the fact when they said, well, it's not safe. Well, I think that there's medical proof now that states that there's more damage done bare knuckle with broken noses and cuts and more blood in a fight. But with the glove on, there's more brain trauma. Which would you rather have? And so when I had the opportunity, and I've been following bare knuckle for a while, but I was disappointed in some of the direction it was going as far as putting a glove on, cutting the knuckles out, and trying to trick people into thinking it was bare knuckle because the knuckles were half inch deep and they were never going to hit anybody. So now we have the opportunity with this thing that arose about fighting. First, it was going to be Decca Hagee. I was a little bit skeptical. He really wasn't accomplished much yet. And I said, you know what? We'll do this because I see an opportunity to be able to take bare knuckle and be able to bring it to a professional level. And we could start off with something like this. That would be great. I didn't really want the opponent because I'm not saying he's not tough, because I'm sure he is, but he just wasn't an accomplished fighter or had a name. Well, that kind of fell through. I wasn't interested. I kind of backed out. And then they came at me with Quinn, and then I did some research on him, and I said, you know what, this can work, because this guy has a legacy, he has a history behind him that goes all the way back to old school with his heritage, and with my, where I come from, which is the No Holds Barred in HB early days where it was bare knuckle, we could put these two together and really take BKB or whatever they're going to call it, and make it a professional organization. I can remember, and this is one of the things that fueled me about getting this thing going and getting involved and help making this thing grow, was that I remember back in the earlier days with the very first UFCs, when me and Royce were taking people down and we were submitting them, and they would scream and yell and say, stand up and fight like a man. Boo! They would throw things at us because they didn't understand submission. They only wanted to see bare knuckle. The first thing they heard of it was bare knuckle. We want to see guys fight bare knuckle. Well, now everybody's forgotten those roots and what made them love NHB and MMA.
Yeah.
It was because it was bare knuckle. So now we have an opportunity to give the fans what they originally wanted to see. To guys to stand up and fight like a man.
We broke the news that Quinn was looking to fight Aaron Brink in a stand-up match with possibly hybrid rules. So that was, I think, last year. And Aaron Brink is a great fighter and a great person, but obviously it doesn't have anywhere near the name recognition that Ken Shamrock has. And Ken, we've heard all sorts of crazy rumors about how and where this fight might take place. I personally heard it might be in an MMA ring. Then I heard it may be in a boxing ring, or it may even be outside in a concrete platform surrounded by hay bales. And I'm not kidding. I literally heard that. What's the inside scoop there? I mean, who put this fight together? Who's promoting it? And, you know, kind of take us through that.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I get where, and when we were talking about it, we were talking about, the starting of NHB. And, you know, I mean, you look at it now, and everything that you see is like guys fighting on graveled streets and circle of a hail bay, and they get in the middle and they fight each other in somebody's backyard or in a schoolyard somewhere.
Right.
It is that that type of thing right now. It's underground. It's the Kimbo Slice type thing where he got famous because he went around bare knuckle and fought people in their backyards or wherever it was at, and he got famous because of that.
Right.
So we know that there is a need and a want for it. We know this, but we have to bring it to a professional level. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is by being able to have it in sanctioned arenas. And whether it's in a cage or a ring or a fire pit, who knows? As long as we have some sort of standard in which we fight in and have the rules as such that people understand when they go to fight how they're fighting. And I believe that this is just another extreme sport that has been untapped, but yet people are wanting to see it because it proves it through social media, because everybody wants to watch it.
What about sanctioning? You mentioned sanctioning. My understanding is that this stuff is at times tolerated as part of inter-family feuds by the police, but it's still technically not legal in a lot of places, and the travelers are known for putting up large sums of their own money for fights. Is that the case here?
Absolutely. You know, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Snatch with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of a hint of that in there, and so it really is, and there's a history that goes way back that the roots of boxing come from this, the roots of regular boxing. So we are really going way, 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 way back to put these things on. But the thing that I think that we're going to be able to do with this is something that's very close to my heart, is be able to prove to people and show people that the things that they have been taught and the brainwash that they've been taught for so long is absolutely untrue. We can prove this through what we're going to do with boxing, and that is bare knuckle is not dangerous like putting a glove on somebody and allowing them to hit you in the head 100 times without hurting their hand. This is going to be able to show people. Now, listen. It doesn't look good because people will get bloody, and noses will be broken, and occasional jaws will be broken. But the brain trauma that you're going to have, as opposed to putting a glove on and hitting somebody 100 times in the head every round, is a lot less. So I ask you, would you rather have scar tissue and maybe a broken nose and possibly not eat for 6 weeks? Or would you rather, at the end of your career, not be able to remember your wife's name or your children's name?
That's a good point. And it would be truly electrifying if we saw Dana White show up in his private jet with a briefcase full of cash to be wagered on Ken Shamrock as part of a gypsy boxing match.
I tell Dana White, if he's having money problems right now, he should really do that, man. Tell the UFC to take all the money they got and put it on Ken Shamrock.
Yeah. What sort of challenges do you think Quinn presents as a potential opponent? I mean, he's extremely tough, a good boxer, and a very experienced fighter under these rules.
You know, I was asked that question a little bit earlier, and they said, well, are you nervous about what he may present, or you might get in there and find out he's a lot more than you expected? And my answer to that question is absolutely, I am. I'd be crazy not to, because I don't know much about him. The things that I see about him, you know, it doesn't give you a true understanding of what his abilities are, because he's really not fighting anybody that really challenges him. He's got pretty good feet. Looks like he moves okay. You know, his hands are pretty decent. Yeah, everything about what he does is decent. He seems to be in good shape. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm going to break him down. I'm going to look and see what it is that I can find that would help me in this fight. And I'm taking the fight seriously, because the guy doesn't go undefeated and then not have something that... There's something there. I mean, I'm not taking this guy for granted, man. I'm going in. I'm prepared for this.
Yeah, you fought the best and the best in the combat sports, and you're the mainstream superstar with the X Factor and the Hall of Fame UFC and MMA career, and you've also fought, as you mentioned, without the gloves, you know, previously. And so a lot of people are picking you to win based on these facts. And I know you've had some hand injuries. Do you have any concerns about injuring yourself due to a lack of recent experience with bare knuckles, Ken?
Absolutely. That's a concern and a definitely something that we will be working on with our game plan. I think that's something when No Holds Barred first came out that a lot of people were not aware of. Being able to punch and forgetting that there's 3/4 of the head is rock solid. You got a quarter of that head that you can actually hit and not hurt your hand. So that is a concern, no question. I don't want to go in the first round, go in there and have my hand broke, and then have to jab him the whole round. So we're going to work on that. We're going to get ourselves prepared. We're going to go back to the drawing board and start training the way we used to train when I had the old lion's den when we were trained bare knuckle. And we'd go in there and just tap each other and let each other know that, hey, you left that open. So we're going to go back to that, and we're going to get me prepared for this bare-knuckle fight properly.
And speaking of injuries, you've definitely had some bad luck in the ring, which has led to fights being stopped in the past. I mean, you had a couple of bad referee stoppages, the crazy fight with Rich Franklin, one or two in-ring injuries, and some general misfortune and weirdness. But almost none of those could be called your fault because they were just seemingly freak accidents, I mean, freak injuries. But there's a vocal section of MMA fans who believe that Ken Shamrock fights are now likely than most to have a disappointing ending. The way your leg broke against Mike Bork had some people questioning whether or not you're still able to compete and give fans their money's worth. When this fight with Quinn was announced, many news sites ran the headlines, 50-year-old Ken Shamrock as if you're too old to compete. And I always wanted to get your reaction to that because there was one, I think, site that took it a little bit too far when they said towards the end of his career, Shamrock was often a sorry sight and became synonymous with being on the receiving end of beatdowns. What's your response to that, Ken?
I agree with him. I really do. I'm sick to my stomach with some of the performances that I had. My strength is I'll never quit. And my strength is I'll never quit. I had problems, which I will probably write a book about afterwards, and people will go, that's just unbelievable. But I had to take time away. I had to go back and say, Ken, get away from the ring. Stay away and heal up. Get yourself prepared. And because you can't go into a fight and not be able to train for it because you can't get through one day of training. So I really did have to take some time away. I had to go back to the drawing board and find out, hey, listen, can I still compete? And I needed to step away and get some things taken care of. And I went back to training, and I kicked myself in the butt all the time because I think to myself, all I had to do back then was go away for a year and heal up, and I didn't do it. And I did have some horrible fights, and those are pretty accurate statements from that, and that's honest, and I don't. That person that's writing it has every right to write it because that's what it was. It was atrocious. It was horrible. But that's why I'm here now. It's so that I can make up for those horrible things, those things that I did at the end of my career, not being smart, being too hard-headed to take time off to heal up. So I'm back. I'm healed up. I'm ready to step in there, and I'm ready to do what I need to do to put all of that stuff behind me. Those things after this fight will be erased, will be over. They will not be able to write that anymore.
That's awesome. Do you feel like you're healthy enough to perform to the standard that people expect from a legend such as yourself? I mean, Bernard Hopkins is still competing and doing very well, close to 50, although it seems like he's taken extremely good care of his body at all times and hasn't overexerted himself sometimes to the detriment of his fights. So has being away from the ring for a while helped with your injuries and so forth?
Absolutely. I did something today. I went out and I did some cardio, and I started to tear up. I mean, I literally just started to tear up because for so long I have been just asking questions, why me? What's wrong? Why? why is this happening to me? I mean, I'm a great fighter. I'm in great shape. Why can't I train the way I want to train? And I was doing it today, and I remember just running and doing all the things I wanted to do, and my heart rate was great. I wasn't getting tired. My legs were strong, and I just started to tear up and just thought, you know, thank you. You know,
yeah.
I know all those times I was angry, and I couldn't understand what was happening, and no one could give me a reason or an answer. And you know, a year ago, I finally got the answer and was able to get it fixed and cleaned up. And here I am working out and thinking to myself, I'm in better shape now, and I've just started in my training than I've been in 10 years, and I haven't even got into my training yet.
Well, you know, it definitely sounds like it. It definitely, you know, and you wouldn't go in there, I don't think, if you were at your best. I think that, you know, everything that you've done for the sport and your reputation requires you, I think, to give it your all and to put 100% in the competition. And, you know, being that this is going to be a really tough fight, Quinn is not going to go down easily in this fight, so we could potentially see a real war here. But one thing I think that you have going in your favor, and I could be wrong, it seems like you haven't taken a lot of head trauma the way some other fighters have that you mentioned earlier, you know, the brain trauma and whatnot. I mean, if we rule out fights where you were either simply exhausted or injured, your TKO loss rate drops off significantly. We may see you get knocked down or rocked or stumbled after a punch, but we never really see Ken Shamrock laid out, you know, face down, unconscious, the way we do other fighters. Of the punches you've absorbed over your career, which would you say was the hardest?
I have never, and it's a shame, too, because I know what people see maybe looks, you know, whatever they see on TV looks like it, they're landing or whatever, but I'm honestly, if God is my witness, that the only time that I have ever been hit and hurt was with Don Fry.
Right.
Where I went down, and I ended up in a heel hook on him. He clipped me. He caught me with a shot. I went down. I don't even remember rolling and getting him. I wake up. I come to with him, like, after I already have him in a leg lock, but I don't remember how I got there. So I watch it on TV, and I was like, man, I don't remember that. So I have a great chin. And these other times that people see me go down or get hit, I was never hurt. You see me pop right up. I was never hurt. People will tell you who has ever trained with me in training, I've never been knocked out, ever. Never been knocked down.
Yeah, you popped right back up after that shot from Fry, and that was an absolute bomb that he landed. And like many people, I still feel like you won that fight. Winning 3 seconds with a big punch shouldn't be enough to take the decision, but that was a hell of a shot. Do you ever feel the symptoms of memory loss or anything of that nature we see some fighters report? Because you always seem very sharp to me, unlike a lot of guys that you know we see, and your voice hasn't changed at all over the years.
I feel very fortunate because I focused on, just like Hoyce, I focused on getting people to the ground, because I realized that even though I could punch, even though that I'm very powerful, I have power in both hands, the chances of somebody getting lucky are a lot higher than somebody getting lucky with a submission. You heard of a lucky punch, but you don't hear of a lucky submission. So I really based my career on being able to clinch and get people to the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so are there any concerns on your part about any past health problems that may impair your performance? I mean, I mentioned earlier the Mike Bork injury. That was going back, I think, now going on 5 years and whatnot. How are you? Are you 100% healthy going into this fight, or is there any potential health problems that may arise? I mean, I guess it's impossible for a fighter to be 100% healthy going into a fight.
Well, especially a fighter that's up in age, there's always things you got to work around. But I can honestly say this, going into this fight, though, I'm a different man. I You know, as God is my witness, man, I have been truly blessed with this time off. And I'm looking forward, and I'm taking nothing from Quinn. I respect what he's done. I respect where he comes from. But, man, this is my time. I mean, with everything, the way things are going, with the way my body's reacting, with the way that I've been able to come back, this is my time.
There was always talk of you having a serious neck injury that either occurred during or was exacerbated in the WWE match where Mr. Hughes apparently, to work an angle, injured you, I guess. What's the truth with that? I mean, how is your neck and how are your joints doing at this point?
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, after fighting all these years, there's always getting up in the morning and you're cracking and popping. But once the day gets going, I get the blood flow, I'm fine. I'm 100% ready to rock and roll. But I would be lying to say that when I get up in the morning, it definitely, especially when it's snowing out or it's cold out, man, it's rough to get started. But once I get started, the blood is flowing, I get them going through my joints, man, I feel great.
And how healthy would you say you were relative to the Ken Shamrock of the past? I mean, obviously, you know, your time when you were tearing it up at the King of the Cage or King of Pancrase, when you're the King of the Pancrase, that was just, it almost seems like a lifetime ago. But you know, you've been active, you know, off and on, going on for decades now. How do you compare to the Ken Shamrock of the past?
Well, right now, comparing to the Ken Shamrock of the past, is that, well, one thing that would be dropping off would definitely be my flexibility. No question, with some of the injuries that I've had, I'm not as flexible as I used to be. I haven't lost my speed. I haven't lost my strength. And the one thing that I can gain that will make up for me not being as flexible as I used to be is that my knowledge of this world that we live in now is just tremendous. I've got so much more ability of being able to break down fights, being able to look at somebody, being able to set up a game plan, being able to train smart and get prepared for a fight. All those things that I have from experience, I believe, will definitely overshadow my flexibility.
I feel like if the Ken Shamrock who fought Fujita had cardio and wasn't sick, that you would have made a potential all-time great run during your comeback. When you fought Fujita, it looked like a fighter had come from the future. I mean, Ken Shamrock against Fujita looked like the Fedor of 205 with the shots you were landing and the takedown defense. And we spoke about that fight at length the last time you were on the show. But just to revisit it, why do you think you fought so well against Fujita despite the illness you were suffering?
Well, I've always been able to fight like that. I just never really focused on my stand-up. And that's where I think a lot of people that don't understand that, you know, I used to be known as One Punch Shamrock. Wherever I went, and I was working at some clubs and bouncing or when I was playing ball, when I got into a situation or a scrap, I used to put the guy unconscious. I had the nickname in my hometown in Susanville, California as One Punch Shamrock. I went to Redding, California to play some ball. I worked in a nightclub up there, and they called me One Punch Shamrock. So I have that ability. I just chose to do submissions for so long. So when you look at what I did with Fujita, I actually taken an opportunity to focus on my striking, and I did that. But I'm going to say this, and that's all I'm going to say, is that my problems when I had that with Fujita and me not being able to continue and being seeing stars in the corner, that affected me for 15 years. 15 years and nobody noticed it. All through my other fights, I was having the same issues, and I couldn't figure it out. I thought it was I was just getting old. That's how it works. But we have fixed that problem.
Ken, were you frustrated that you didn't or couldn't fight like that against Tito?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why this fight is so important to me, is to be able to show people who Ken Shamrock is today without this problem.
Absolutely. And What was the maddest you've ever been at a person you didn't actually beat up? And how do you rank Mr. Hughes against, say, the Nasty Boys, who you also had an infamous incident with?
I would have to say that, you know, my frustrations were all premeditated. That's how I prepare for a fight. That's how I prepare to get into the ring, or at least that's what I used to do. And I was very angry. Early on in my career, it was a way of survival. That's how I survived in the world, coming from living on the street out of a car to being in a group home, a ward of the court. I had to survive by being that guy that everybody was afraid of or tried to make afraid of. And then I went into this, as I started to grow, that's where we, whereas people have to teach you how to let those things go. But I use that to fuel my intensity in fighting, because this was my opportunity to make it in life. This was something that I could do that would make me successful after everybody that I've come across in, as a young kid and growing up, was telling me I was going to be dead or in prison, and being able to shove it in their face saying, this is who I am. I'm going to be successful. Nobody's going to take it from me. So when I entered the ring, the guy across the ring was a guy trying to take away my livelihood, the guy that was trying to take away my destiny. And so when I entered the ring, I entered with a lot of aggression, a lot of intensity, and a lot of anger. And it wasn't necessarily because that guy had done anything to me. It was because of what he could do to me. And so I came in with that. Like, this is my life. This is my only chance, and you're not taking it from me. As it progressed, things started being more successful for me. It just became who I was. People were like, man, that stare Shamrock had, man, it was deathly. And so it just became a part of who I was after a while. And I just kept doing it because it just was a part of my DNA.
I read once that the Nasty Boys were planning to throw you off the balcony after hitting you with the sucker shots that put you out. Surely that's just them working the marks with those statements, right?
No, that was the real deal. I was in a nightclub. It was called Plum Crazies in North Carolina. We had just got done with the show, and one of my friends had this girl with him. And she was pretty well put together. She had a big breasts. And we were sitting at the bar, and we were talking, and the Nasty Boys came over, and they started talking, and then they reached over, and they grabbed her boob. And at first, I was stood off, and then the guy next to me, he wasn't a wrestler. He was just kind of there, and he's hanging out with us. And the girl got mad and said, stop it, and knocked their hand away. And, of course, my friend, I'm not going to mention his name, was sitting there, and he looked at him. He kind of laughed, said, okay, man, all right, guys. And just kind of laughed it up, because what's he going to do? These guys are two big dudes standing there, and they're messing with us. So they said, oh, okay, yeah, we're just playing around, and they reached over and grabbed it again. And after they did it a second time, I jumped in front of them, and I said, dude, that's enough. Stop. And that's when they started getting mouthy with me and started to talk some smack. So I grabbed one of them, and I shoved him. And I said, if you got something to say, let's do it right now. And then immediately a bouncer came in and grabbed me and shoved me into the bathroom and said, Ken, relax. Well, they made the Nasty Boys leave the club because of what they did. And so me, with the temper I had and the anger I had, I went and hunted them down. And they were staying at this hotel that we were all at. I knew what room they were in. Mm-hmm. I knocked on the door. They wouldn't open the door, so I kicked it in. And when I kicked the door and I looked over and I saw the blonde one laying on the bed, it looked like he was passed out. That's the last thing I remembered. From what I understand is that the taller one, the dark-haired one, had hit me with a metal phone from behind and then knocked me out and then prepared to put the steel-toed boots to me, kicked me all the way out the door onto the ledge, and then was going to throw me over, but one of the boys stopped them. Now, if they'd done that, I'd have been dead. And so I remember in the hospital, they said that I had died going to the hospital, that they lost my pulse because they broke my sternum, they broke my eye socket, they gave me some brain damage, which luckily we were able to get under control. I mean, they literally tried to kill me.
Wow.
I think it was because they were afraid or fear that I would get up. They didn't want me getting up. So I was probably the most angriest at that point in my life than I had ever been. And if I would have seen them or been around them within a year or two, I would have probably killed them. I would have had no control because I was that mad. But I remembered it was several years after. I had still been angry, you know, but it had subsided. Because I was in the business, pro wrestling, and I'd always seen them on WWF. They had went from where we were at, and they went into the big show. And I'd see them every now and then on TV, and it would just, my blood would start to boil. And then one time, I ended up making it up to the WWF after I started fighting and became something. I completely forgot about all that. And then I got an opportunity to go to WWF, and again, I forgot about it all because I never really saw the guy. I mean, he was gone, you know, they were flash the pan there and gone. Had a lot of issues with them, so they basically got rid of him. So once I got there, I started doing my thing, and it was really no big deal. Well, one day, we're going into the airport. We're getting ready to travel, and we're walking up to the ticket desk. And Billy Gunn and Road Dogg were with me at the time. And I remembered I saw one of them. And I remember it was the blonde-haired one. Mm-hmm. And immediately I got red and started huffing and puffing. And Billy goes, "What's wrong, dude? What's wrong?" And I looked over and I saw that dude. And I remembered Billy, everybody knew the story. And he saw him and he goes, "Oh, shoot." So he goes, "Not here, Ken." And I walked up to him. And as I was walking up to him, he was at the counter. And I looked at him. I said, "I'm going to kill you. I am going to kill you." And he looked at him and he goes, "Dude, man, it was a long time ago, man. I'm sorry." And that was the blonde-haired one.
Right.
And I was I was shaking so bad. And Billy grabbed me and he goes, "Let's go. Come on, let's go." So we went to the gate. And I was still shaking at the gate. And as I was sitting there, the tall one come walking by, and he jumps over the seat trying to be cool. He doesn't see me, and he starts screaming at the boys because they were going in an independent show somewhere else, and they just happened to be there. So they jump over, and all the boys were there, and he was kind of being loud. He didn't see me, and he goes, "What's up with Shamrock, man? Someone needs to give that guy a chill pill." And I jumped over the seat. I grabbed him. I spun him around. I looked at him, and I said, "I'm standing right here. I'm going to use normal words and not what the words that I used." But I told him, I said, "I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you right here, right now." And I said, "So you might as well put your bag down because I'm going to kill you." I said that about 100 times. And everybody started gathering around. And this guy is probably 6'6", you know, 275 pounds. He's a big guy, right?
Yeah.
And I was at the time probably 225, you know, 6 foot, 225, 6'1", 225. So he has a bag in his hand, and he literally turns around away from me, right, with a bag in his hand. I think, okay, he's going to drop the bag, he's going to swing at me. And I'm okay with that because I'm getting ready to just tear his ass up. And so he holds on his bag, he turns his shoulder to me, he looks at me, and with everybody standing there, he looks at me and goes, "If you hit me, it's a federal offense." I literally, all those years of anger, frustration, wanting to hurt this man, had just gone away. I literally looked at him like pathetically, like,
"Yeah.
Did you just say that? In front of all these guys, you just said that. After all those years of saying that you beat me up one-on-one, there was no punching anybody from behind, I took him on straight up, and you turned around and you bitched out like that. If I'd have beat him up, it couldn't have been any better." I mean, this was literally a awesome, awesome position because I saw this guy punk himself out.
Wow, that's like pretty embarrassing. I mean, I how can they even show their face in public after that? I mean, just, you know.
Yeah, that to me was that vindicated anything they could have ever done to me, because it really showed, because all the bragging and all the things they were talking about being tough was shattered right there.
You know, I'm surprised with all this pro wrestling talk that we haven't seen Ken Shamrock back in the WWE. I know you've been open about wanting to go back there, and the fact that they didn't return your calls is weird. I don't know a lot about pro wrestling, but it kind of seems like crazy to me that they didn't want to bring Ken Shamrock as the corner for one of Lesnar's opponents to counter the MMA technique. Then again, the WWE does a lot of stuff where it seems like they drop the ball due to the fragile nature of some of the egos involved. Ken Shamrock chasing Paul Heyman around outside the ring would nullify some of the advantage Lesnar has, that's for sure. And I've read elsewhere that you think that Triple H doesn't like you and that his feelings might be a factor in why they haven't brought you back.
You know, who knows? You know, I thought of it first, but some of the things that I've heard lately doesn't back that up, so maybe I was off base. Maybe it's something else.
Yeah, I mean, what I've seen about Triple H is he almost seems like one of those guys thinks that the pro wrestling business is a shoot. He seems so protective and almost insecure about his own on-air character. He even tried to claim that he would do okay against the prime Kurt Angle in a street fight. Do you think Triple H, the kind of blown-up bodybuilder type, might be intimidated by someone with a real shoot background such as yourself?
Well, that's hard to say, because you're talking about the inside of somebody and what who they really are. I have not seen anything that would say that Triple H is afraid, but I haven't seen anything that says Triple H is tough either. So I can't make a statement on that either way, because I don't know one way or the other, because as far as I know, we've never seen it.
I would hate to think what a Ken Shamrock heel hook might do to a puffed up, fragile leg of his with those small calves and a history of quad injuries.
Well, I would hate to see what a Ken Shamrock heel hook would do to anybody.
Well, yeah, you have some of the most devastating leg attacks in MMA history. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, how would you rate yourself overall as a grappler? I mean, we hear all these stories about how you dominate so many of the top fighters from your era in the gym, but I've heard you downplay your grappling ability in public. I mean, I remember when you said you were a brawler who likes leg locks on tough, and then I thought you were kind of selling yourself short there. I definitely think you're an elite submission fighter.
Well, I am an MMA guy. I have always, and I don't think I've ever trained without takedowns and strikes. They've always mixed in with my submissions. So the pure grappling, which is something I've never done, would be interested to see how I would do.
In his book, Sakuraba said you were sleepy in the ring, so he tapped your face with punches to wake you up. I'd like to see you grapple Sakuraba at Metamoris to get some payback. What do you think of that idea, Ken? I mean, do you think you'd dominate Sakuraba at this stage?
Oh, I think I'd have dominated him then. I mean, my whole plan was to get Sakuraba moving towards me and get him to punch and feel like he was going to win the fight, so that my takedown would be a little bit easier. And then maybe towards the end of the round, I land more leg kicks and strikes. But my plan was to really take him down and submit him, because he's supposed to be this great grappler. But then I go sliding back into his corner. I turn my back because my foot is slid through the ropes, and they stop the fight. And I'm thinking to myself, what did he hit me with?
Yeah. And what about Marco Huas? I mean, can the folks at home imagine what a grappling match between Ken and Marco Huas would look like? I mean, that would be full of intrigue. Metamoris has given submission wrestling a real shot in the arm, I think.
Well, I think Marco Huas definitely, in my opinion, was a really genuine tough guy. He brought the striking in with the leg kicks along with the defense to jiu-jitsu, and he had a background to prove it. So I respected Marco. He was a good guy.
When you have pioneers and pillars of the sport such as yourself involved on a show with new fighters, I think it establishes a link and a continuity between different eras. I've always been a big advocate of the fact that the UFC doesn't own MMA. They just promote it at the highest level for the most part. And if they don't feel there's a place for legends giving interviews, commentary, and analysis, I really think that's their loss. It looks like Scott Coker is going to be sweeping up all those cards so he can play them together as a hand against the UFC. I remember when you came in at the UFC and gave that speech about the history of the organization and the new Zuffa era that really fired up the crowd. And whether or not Zuffa can see it or care to use it, it's a fact that Kent Shamrock is one of the fighters who connects directly with fans, and many of those fans are the kind who stick with the sport regardless of whether Brock Lesnar is fighting or not. Do you have any relationship with Spike TV or Scott Coker or the folks over at Bellator?
I do, actually. Me and Scott Coker have definitely talked just to give him my support of what he's doing. I think he's doing a tremendous job. I think what he did with bringing in these legends to help support the Bellator and to help even, you know, talk to some of these young fighters who are up and coming, the knowledge that they can get from guys who have already been there and done that is tremendous. So, man, hats off to them for really reaching out and trying to make that happen. And on the flip side of that, it also makes these guys who help build the sport appreciated. So the fans always do appreciate them, but it just seems like I think that, maybe the organizations need to more look at these guys as roles to help support the event, but at the same time, help build the organization at the same time so they're involved and they don't feel like they're, red-headed stepchild.
Yeah. I think it would be good for them to establish some sort of relationship with you. I mean, now that you have buried the hatchet with the UFC, and I think also the idea of Ken Shamrock and Frank Shamrock being on the air together in some role could be compelling television. We saw that documentary. That was absolutely great television. You guys definitely, tried to work out some issues and whatnot. Do you feel like you're seen by executives and people in suits who make decisions as potentially being more unpredictable than Frank?
Well, possibly. I'm not sure. I think they may look at me as being more difficult. I don't know about dependable, but difficult, because the way that I've always handled my business is that when we go to a contract and we agree on something, I hold you to it. I don't care if it's the smallest detail, but I hold you to it because we have a contract. And I think that's been a lot of my issues with the time when I've had issues and with different organizations is because they don't hold up to the fine little details that we have agreed on in the contract. And that, to me, is important. And it may not be to them, but it is to me, and it is in the contract, and I want it to be that way. And so that's probably been the biggest stick on me is that I pay attention to the little details, and I want them fulfilled.
Ken, before I let you go, let's remind people where to keep up with you on social media and let them know about any projects or businesses you've got going on. You're in the bail bonds business as protection, right?
Not the bail bonds. I'm in the executive protection agency. We are in the process right now of getting our license. We're working with different people to get going. And so probably it'll be in 2015. We'll be up and running. It'll be the Shamrock Executive Protection Agency. So we're working on that. And then, of course, I got my sports drink out called the Shamrock Slam. We've got that actually advertising now on the social media sites. I'm involved with a couple other things going on I can't mention right now, but will be released here in the next couple of weeks. That's going to be very exciting for a lot of young fighters. So I'm very excited about it. And then, something that's real dear and close to my heart is being able to get back in the ring and do something that I've been wanting to do since the beginning of NHB, and that's fight bare knuckle.
Any advice for John Jones? I mean, that he's going through some personal problems now, substance abuse and whatnot. John Jones needs to listen to Ken Shamrock, I think.
John Jones is a good dude. John Jones has just put him, because I met him when he first started out, and he was pure, he had a good heart, he has a great personality, and just like all of us who grab that title, we get down the road a little bit, and we just think that the world is ours. And I'm talking about me. I'm talking about other people that I know that have done the same thing. And John Jones is no different than the rest of us. We've achieved our goal. We became world champions. At a point in time in our career, we think that we are all of that. And I think Jones right now realizes that, hey, it's time for me to change. And brother, I'm there with you. It's time for you to change. We got your back. Just get what you need to get done and come on back.
All right, one last question. I'm sorry. It's been almost an hour here, but I really appreciate you taking the time. I mean, you could see when we try to get other UFC legends like Dan Severn, it's almost impossible. So I really, really appreciate this. This comes from Matthew Wells of MMA Latest News. What are Ken's thoughts on CM Punk making the transition to MMA?
Well, I love it. I think this guy has, well, and one, I don't understand why everybody's jumping on him about it, because, listen, this guy's got everything to lose. He's putting himself out there. He's going, you know what? I've been a star in pro wrestling. I have my reputation there. But I'm going to go into MMA, and I'm going to risk it all. I mean, man, people, give this guy mad props, man. I mean, he's not like he's not resting on his laurels. I mean, he wants to get better. He wants to do something different. He wants to challenge himself. Isn't that what life's about? Always trying to achieve bigger and better goals and try to be happy in what you're doing? I mean, I give him props, man. God bless him. I wish him the best. I hope that they take care of him properly and give him the right fights and not give him somebody like, what's his name, got James Toney with Randy Couture, where it was a grappler just took him down. He had no shot. He should have gave him Chuck Liddell or something where there was an opportunity there. But I hope that they give him somebody that's in the caliber of him. He's a draw. He's famous. He will bring more ratings to this business. So allow him to do that and let him go out there and prove that he belongs there. Don't go saying he doesn't belong there. Let him prove it.
Absolutely. Ken, give us any social media sites, any websites, so we can let the fans know how they can keep in contact with you and see what you got going on.
Well, everything is always up to date, and we're on there all the time, and that's my website right now. It's kenshamrock.com. And my Twitter, my LinkedIn, my Facebook, my Instagram, all my social media stuff is linked to my website. So KenShamrock.com is all the updated and the latest news on what I'm doing, and also on other things that are happening in the world that interest me, like block trading, which is investments. I do a little bit of that. I've got a motivational speaking site on there where you can bring me in, and I can either speak to schools or churches or businesses, whatever it is that you want. I'm a motivational speaker. So I got all that on my website, KenShamrock.com. Come visit me.
Awesome. Ken, thanks a lot. Good luck against James Quinn, my friend. It's great to see you back, and thank you for all you do. We really, really appreciate it. You're a legend, a great human being, and I wish you Godspeed in the future, my friend.
Thank you, brother. God bless.
Take care.
Got no car, so I got no soul. Life is prison, no parole, no control. Food, I got my number on a wiretap. Cause I jack for Civilac. Fuck a Cadillac, so fine. One motive, no focus. Every sidewalk, the focus like a tightrope. Yes, I know my deadline, sire. Live my life in fire. I'm sending things to stop under the barbed wire. The mother of my genre, who's your mind at my grave. It's my life for that life, so call it a free trade. Well, neither am I even born a star. I took a death trip. We'll be right back. the white wall.
With MMALatestNews.com. Big thanks again to Ken Shamrock for spending so much time with us. We really appreciate it. And we hope that all of you enjoyed that interview. There was some great material there that we went over with Ken Shamrock. And, you know, he mentioned John Jones and, you know, how John Jones has to gather himself at rehab and come back and basically, you know, start fresh. Well, on the underground, there's a picture of John Jones with Charlie Sheen at rehab. I got to tell you, you know, just one of these things. I really enjoyed hearing about John Jones testing positive for drugs, and I'll tell you why. When you listen to John Jones speak, okay, in the lead up to basically with all of his fights, you really believe that John Jones was the epitome of discipline. You know, you just seem like a well-oiled machine. That combined with his physical abilities, the guy was just such an overachiever, and you almost reflected upon yourself about your own personal discipline. And you know, it's like look at how well-oiled John Jones is, and look at how you know, accomplished he is. And if we can all be like John Jones, you know, we'd be a much better society. And whatnot. And you almost felt insecure about yourself looking up to someone like John Jones. I'm just speaking on a personal level here. And then what happens is John Jones tests positive for drugs, tests positive for cocaine, which tells me that he's a drug addict. Okay, that's what John Jones is. He's a drug addict, in my opinion. He's someone that has to go explain to his children that he snorts drugs up his nose, and this certainly is in conflict with how he portrays himself to the media, how he talks about himself, and how focused and how disciplined he is, and it almost, I think, speaks to him as to his personality. What type of personality does this guy have to talk that way, and then when he's behind closed doors, to snort drugs, to take drugs, and to basically be the equivalent of a street-level drug addict. And I got to tell you, in my opinion, it really makes John Jones, I know everybody will disagree with me because you know the Zuffa media has really glossed over this. I haven't really any analysis into the UFC's relationship with this, the culture of the UFC, how that could have contributed to this, what this says about the sport in general, the UFC's policy of you know, now after this abolishing out of competition drug testing, all of these things, you know, Dana White, the UFC, of course, spinning this, oh, this is the greatest thing that has happened, all this stuff. It really makes me believe that John Jones is invalid. I just don't take him seriously anymore. I really don't, because we don't know how often he's done drugs before. You know, I mean, you think this is the first time that John Jones has snorted cocaine? You think this is the first time? No, I can guarantee you pretty much probably during every fight or prior to every fight, this guy has been using drugs. Okay, this guy he's a cheater. He's invalid. Okay, and it speaks volumes about the culture in MMA, the drug culture. Well, we knew this years ago. I mean, going back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I've had people tell me that, you know what, Bob, 90% of these guys are on performance-enhancing drugs, okay? And then, you know, UFC allowing TRT, and that caught up with them. They started to get bad PR with that. And then, you know, this is – it's all fake. It's just all for show, okay? It's all almost meaningless in the end. And that's my opinion. I really, really think that this makes him invalid. I think that it makes him look like a weak person, which he truly is. He truly is a weak person. You know, and I compare John Jones almost to Michael Lassane. I don't know if you remember. You probably don't remember, but back in the mid-90s, there was a lady named Kathleen Weinstein, I believe her name was. She was a teacher, and she was carjacked and ultimately killed by this individual named Michael Lassane. And this guy had a similar personality, at least from what I could tell, and I'm not a psychologist, but just on the surface of things, to John Jones. He was a narcissistic sociopath that kidnapped this teacher and suffocated her with her own jacket. She actually recorded something like a 45-minute conversation with this nut job, and they were going to make it into an HBO documentary, and they didn't do it. But she recorded herself trying to plead with this sociopath who wanted to steal a car for his birthday or something to that effect. And it reminds me of John Jones. It really does, because you know, there's something to be said about John Jones's personality. I think he has a character flaw. And you know what the sad part is too, and this is true, that most fans won't care about this, right? They say that, oh, you know, he'll come back and people will be more interested, you know, people will be more eager to see him fight, maybe more willing to buy pay per view, and that's unfortunate, because that again speaks to the MMA culture out there, where it doesn't matter what these guys are putting in their body, it doesn't matter. You know, certainly the U.S. doesn't care, and it's just unfortunate. But you know what? John Jones is a weak person. He's a drug addict, in my opinion, and he should be looked at as such. I can have sympathy for those people, and I don't want to seem like I'm coming across as harsh or insensitive. Believe me, I'm a poor person in America. I'm a worker, okay? But let me tell you, I would almost have sympathy for someone if they weren't so brash, and now it's convenient for him to go to rehab. Now it's convenient for him to sort of, you know, try to get sympathy from the public. But if somebody was humble and somebody was, you know, somebody admitted that they struggled with problems, and we know that John Jones had a DUI a few years ago where he crashed his car and whatnot, and didn't try to portray themselves as something else, I could have maybe a little bit more sympathy for that person. But you know what? I don't think that John Jones is Val. I lost a lot of respect for him as a fighter. Not even talking about a person, as a fighter. Because I think that John Jones can't really take him. I don't. And again, I kind of have a very, very odd perspective on this, because again, most people disagree with me. But the fact that this guy comes from a family where both of his brothers, if I'm not mistaken, play for the NFL, are on NFL football teams, shows you that the athleticism that this guy was born with. This guy didn't start from the ground up. You know, this guy, it's not like an Anthony Pettis, who can train, you know, and could fight and can really just elevate himself to a level that nobody's at in his weight division. John Jones had more tools. John Jones had more advantages. Okay, and you know, if he wasn't his size, if he didn't have his reach, he would never reach the level that he's reached as an MMA fighter. Okay, and it goes to the media. It goes to our objective society where we overlook that and we believe that it's a fair competition between both fighters and everybody starts birth equally. Well, that's not the case at all. Okay, so it's a little difficult, I think, for me to consider him the greatest champion of all time, especially now that he's using drugs and you know the Nevada State Athletic Commission, the fact that the testing positive for cocaine of course is not a performance enhancing drug. I think that needs to be evaluated too. I mean, we're going to say that marijuana is a performance enhancing drug, and yet cocaine is not. I mean, how do we know that? You know, if John Jones had some of the effects in his system of cocaine, how in the world can we say that's not? It doesn't give him an advantage going into a fight, regardless of how you know how much before they've fight. For example, I believe he tested on December 4th, and the fight was basically a month later. But how do we know that drug wasn't still in his system and affecting his system and whatnot, affecting him, affecting his mind? We don't know that. And I'm sure there's probably scientists out there that would say, yes, if you snort cocaine, okay, that traces of cocaine will be in your bloodstream for a month or so, and there's some residual effect on your body. So it should be considered a performance-enhancing drug. His victory should be overturned. Of course it won't be. And it's just corrupt. It's a corrupt system that means absolutely nothing now, okay? This is really the point that we've arrived at, where you know, the Athletic Commission is corrupt. Everything is corrupt, and it's almost meaningless. It is. So that's it. What else do we got here in the world of MMA here? Got a lot of stuff going on here. Rory McDonald not getting a title shot. He's heartbroken. You know, there were some reports. I wanted to find out about this. It wouldn't really surprise me. And Rory McDonald is a great fighter. Obviously, it goes without saying. But there were some reports that Rory McDonald has autism or Asperger's or something like that. And I didn't really confirm this. But I'm just interested. Maybe somebody could write into us and let us know. But yeah, so now you're going to have a trilogy between Johnny Hendricks and Robbie Lawler, and Robbie Lawler is not thrilled about the trilogy. We'll see if the fans actually end up you know, being thrilled about a third fight between two of them. I don't know. We'll see what happens. And then you've also got Conor McGregor taking on Dennis Seaver, and that's going to take place pretty soon. And let me tell you something, folks. The folks just had an opportunity to interview Dennis Seaver, and it was a really, really good interview. It wasn't too long. It was more in written form and whatnot. And we're going to see. McGregor has said that he's going to finish Seaver inside of 2 minutes. I think a lot of people anticipate that. And then what's next for him? Who is he going to fight in that division? Are they going to give him a wrestler? Are they going to really test him? Or is he going to go straight for a title shot? Looks like the UFC is really promoting this kid, Conor McGregor, and they're most likely going to give him a title shot after the Seaver fight. So we're going to take a brief time out. We'll be right back. We're going to wrap up the show after we come back here on Carson's Corner. Again, big thanks to Kent Shamrock for coming on the show. And we'll be right back after this message. We're back here on Carson's Corner. We're just about out of time here. I want to encourage you to friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Also want to encourage you to support MMA Latest News at MMALatestNews.com. That is MMALatestNews.com. Listen to all the Carson's Corner shows on Spreaker. We're starting to post them on Spreaker at Spreaker.com/Carson's Corner. Also, you could follow me on Twitter, Twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And our old shows, we're starting to put them on Spreaker and also on YouTube as well. I mean, our shows go back to 2006. It's YouTube.com/BobCarsonMMA. Again, YouTube.com/BobCarsonMMA. Thanks again to Kent Shamrock. Thanks to his people for setting this up. Thanks to Dez, who did a tremendous job. It was very, very easy and pleasant to deal with. And we wish Ken the best luck. Looking to get James Quinn McDonough on the program as well to discuss this upcoming fight. He's kind of difficult to get on. We're going to really try to nail him down within the next few days or so. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Bob Carson for MMA Latest News. Show some respect.